So failure wise, you got two options.
Yeah.
Okay. One, you're overseas in a foreign country.
Yep.
No one around you speaks English.
Yep.
Okay. And you're lost. Like you have no clue where you are. There's not a sign in English. Yep. You're not pulling out the phone audience and using Google Translate. You're just, it's done. You're toast. Okay. Yep. So that's option one. And this is with your girlfriend, like or fiance. You're trying to show off. You're trying to look, yep. you know, manly. And you're like, oh crap.
Yep.
Option two, you're driving down the road, middle of nowhere in the U.S.,
yep.
car, vehicle, truck, you know, buggy, whatever it is, breaks down,
yep.
no cell phone service, no traffic's coming by anytime soon.
Yep.
Which option do you want to be stuck in?
Oh, I see. Probably the latter. Yeah, 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 disabled car somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. So I'm an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, okay,
I should say that. So, you know, I'm well trained when it comes to taking care of myself in outland areas. And then my dad growing up, he was an accountant by training, but kind of an amateur mechanic. And so he had me like helping him fix cars and stuff growing up. And so I've got a rough, idea of how to fix at least some stuff on cars. And so I think I could, I'd be pretty well equipped to like figure out what's going on. If I, I'd have to evaluate at the time, what I could do in the situation. But like, I think I'd be, pretty well equipped in that scenario overseas. It's harder, yeah. Outside of the U.S., it's more complex, but middle of nowhere, I could handle myself a little bit.
So I didn't know you're an Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't pick the other one. So that we were originally going to say you're hiking and lost, but I'm an Eagle Scout. So that's just super easy. Like,
yeah.
I'll just pick that one.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yes. I'll totally. Yeah, totally.
I think I would do the foreign country though. Cause I'm the type of guy when a vehicle breaks down, I open the hood and I go, the engine's in there still. So that's good.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Don't know where to go from here.
Yes. Right.
Versus I think I'm social enough, I just find my way through it.
That's true. It's a good call. In cars, I don't want to claim to be some like super capable, but like I can do the fundamentals and cars are harder now than they ever have been too. That's the other dynamic, like all the the electrical stuff and all that, but I think I could figure that out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if you all haven't caught on, you're on the Do You Even Fail podcast. We're here to talk about just the mess ups of life. So super excited. We have Jim on today. If you want to dive into, give him the flyover of who you are and what makes you you before we get into your mess ups.
Yeah. My name is Jim Schultz. I grew up in a small town called South Haven, Minnesota, a town of 186 people. Went to college in the Twin Cities and then out east and met my beautiful wife, Molly, out there. And we now live in a small town in the southwest, metro called Minnetonka. We've got three little daughters that are 8, 5, and almost 3 that keep us really busy. And my family's most important part of my life. Professionally, I'm an attorney by training, and now I run an organization called the Minnesota Private Business Council that advocates for things that we think that help businesses to grow in Minnesota and more broadly, and for policies that can support that. And other than that, just, keep at it with the family. So
I like it. So before we get into your journey and mess ups along the way, do you think you should seek out failure?
That's a good question. It's kind of a complex question. Like, I think you should seek out things that can lead to failure. There's kind of a ways of approaching life where it's, you don't do anything that where you might fail.
Right.
And that's one way to do life. Like, and you can, and there's nothing, I guess, intrinsically wrong with that, but doing things where that have the risk of failure, I think is really valuable because you can, on the one hand, you can, achieve things that you wouldn't otherwise achieved. And then on the other hand, you learn a lot through failure, and that's like kind of like a cliche, I think. But I think you can learn a lot through failure. I certainly have in my life. I've had the good fortune of being, successful in a lot of different things, but I have had some meaningful failures in my life. And the, through that, you get tougher, you learn about yourself, you learn about how to do things, how not to do things, things along those lines. And so I think, seeking out failure, I would say, in itself, probably not intrinsically something to pursue, but you certainly do learn a lot through it. And there's kind of like this like way of approaching life that I think like some, you know, young people, I'm fairly young still, 38, I'm a millennial, but you know, my generation and younger, it's kind of like a, I think there is a contingent of people who kind of go about life like kind of like in bubble wrap, you know, where they like try to avoid, you know, the things that where they might, you know, be damaged or fail or things like that. And I think, you know, I think that's a mistake, you know, and I think, you know, the way to like just broadly, one of my this is a long answer to your question, but I think there's a way of going about life where you kind of seek comfort, you know, all the time, where you don't take risk, where you just, it's all about, you know, having a very comfortable job, comfortable life, you know, you avoid deep entanglements with friends or family or things like that, because that can cause pain and things like that. And I think the way to go about life is not to seek comfort, but to seek a life of sacrifice and risk. And that's kind of how I think about things. But with that comes failure and pain and all that. But I think that's where more meaning lies in life.
So for people listening, I love your answer, but I feel like a lot of people miss the part of, hey, you should seek out challenges or things that could result in failure. How does someone even go about analyzing their own life and seeing where to start in that? Because I think we all look at levels of failure and have different tolerance inside of it. But I also think that results in us thinking these tiny steps are risks, even though they're nothing. So if someone's at home, how do they process that or think about that, in your opinion? Or how do you?
Yeah. I would say, I mean, so, you know, I'm an attorney by training, and, you know, attorneys are, quintessential people who are risk averse, right? You know, because you, as an attorney, you like see all sorts of situations where things have gone sideways, you know, where people are suing each other because of a business transaction that went bad. People are suing each other because of a marriage that failed. People are, signing up contracts where they're trying to avoid every possible, you know, bad outcome in connection with a business transaction or whatever. And so attorneys tend to be extraordinarily risk averse. And I would say, like, through the course of my practice, I kind of became more risk averse as time went on. And, I ran for Minnesota Attorney General in 2022, and that was like a extraordinarily risky thing. And that kind of reset my kind of risk, you know, tolerance, in a lot of different ways. But, you know, to answer your question, I think people should think hard about, fundamentally, it's not, you know, you kind of just, you don't do things for the sake of, you know, taking risks or things like that. But you do want to look at things. What do I really want in, you know, deeply in life? And then you want to take risks to pursue that, you know, and that whether that's, you know, I want to, I want to be married and have kids. And so I'm going to take the risks of, you know, going out there and dating and with the possibility of being rejected and all that and so forth. Or it's, you know, I want to build my own business and so forth. And with that, you know, comes risk. And so it's about, you know, finding the things, you know, what it really is that I want, that I think is right for my life, that I, you know, given my values, given the things I hold dear, you know, what do I want? And from there, it's, you know, it's thinking through the risks, you know, and, you know, analyzing them and trying to find ways to mitigate them. If you're doing if you want to start a business, you know, it's doing things that are prudent to, you know, to mitigate risk and things like that or whatever. But, you know, and then being willing to step out and do it. And that can be really hard when you're taking big risks. Like, you know, in my life, when I quit my job, I stepped away from a very comfortable professional life to run a race for attorney general. And, you know, that was extraordinarily risky. And a lot of people asked me, like, what the hell heck are you doing? But, you know, my wife and I talked about it, and we felt like this is what we're supposed to be doing with our life at this time in our life. And you know, through a fair amount of discussion, and in our case, we're people of faith, a fair amount of prayer, we decided to move forward with it. But to answer your question, I think it's a matter of, you know, of being clear with yourself, like what do I really want to achieve in life at this point in my life and otherwise, and then being willing to step out there and take the risks to do that.
So where do we want to start in Jim's story of, hey, I saw something I wanted, I stepped out and, you know, risk and faith and belief to go get it, and it didn't turn out.
So I've had a few different spots in my life where I've taken kind of meaningful risks, and sometimes they've, you know, I've succeeded and had a good outcome, and sometimes I've failed. And on this one, I reference, to kind of zoom out, you know, basically, or step back a little bit in time, in kind of calendar year 2020 in Minnesota, many people know we had of course the George Floyd murder, we had the rioting and so forth that came after that, and when I from my perspective, I felt like people had we had state leadership that responded to it extraordinarily badly. You know, my view was that we had leadership that, you know, that excused rioting, that excused a lot of the really bad things that happened. You know, people obviously can be angry and mad about what happened to George Floyd without burning down people's houses and businesses and so forth. But we had state leadership that defended it, that got behind crazy things like defunding the police and otherwise. And I was really disturbed by that. And at that point, I kind of thought, like, boy, you know, maybe I should step forward and run for public office, because in my view, we just needed, you know, sane, sober-minded people to do that. And I started, like, you know, looking around and kind of just, like, thinking about it. But I didn't really step forward in a meaningful way, or kind of think about it in a meaningful way, until some people approached me. And I kind of got in dialogue with some people about running for attorney general. And my view was the current occupant of the office at the time, who I ultimately lost to, Keith Ellison, was you know, one of those leaders who had really failed in his duties to prosecute crime, to deal with crime seriously, to back policies that resulted in people being protected from crime, and I decided to get into the race. And this was December of 2021, but through that period, it was a very long period where my wife and I were kind of deliberating on this, and we were thinking about things like having young daughters, things like their safety, things like, you know, me running a race while I'm, you know, awake at 2 a.m. to change a diaper. And you know, when I have to go out the next day to drive up to Roseau, Minnesota, 5 hours away, and, you know, the next night be down in Albert Lea, three hours away, whatever. And then just, of course, you know, having a period of time where we didn't have any income, and tons of different things. But ultimately, we did that analysis, and we just felt called to it. And it was immensely risky. It was there's high chance of failure even to become the candidate for my party, and then ultimately to get to the general election. And a lot of people said, like, don't do it. You're certainly going to lose. You won't win the Republican primary. And then if you get past that, you're going to get crushed in the general election because Minnesota is a light blue state. Blah blah blah. But ultimately, we just felt like, you know, even despite all these risks, even despite all these ways in which this could go sideways for us, like, this is actually just what we feel like we're supposed to be doing with our life right now. So we got into the race. We ultimately won the Republican primary. It wasn't close. Even though people said we were going to get crushed, we won 86 of 87 counties. We won by like 20 points. It wasn't close at all. We had immense, you know, success through a lot of hard work. It was a lot of, like, some pretty dark periods in there, some pretty really tough periods in there. But we got it done over a course of about 8 months to win that, and then went to the general election, and ran what I think was a really good general election race. We got more votes than any Republican state candidate in Minnesota history. We got the higher percentage of the vote than any Republican in Minnesota statewide in 30 years or so, but we nearly came up short. We got 49.6% of the race. It was the closest attorney general's race in Minnesota history. All the polling going into election night had us winning by 6 or 8 points, but we lost. And that was, in all candor, extraordinarily painful. It was, you know, probably the most, like, significant, just, like, you know, just failure in my life, like, in terms of the you know, what I was endeavoring to do and so forth. But that was the ultimate outcome. And, you know, just, you know, zooming back from it, like, we certainly have no regrets. Like, we knew we were called to run in this race, but we didn't know whether or not we were called to win, you know, to be successful ultimately. And we left it all in the field ultimately. And we, I think, got an important message out there. I think we affected the conduct of the current attorney general who beat me in office now. I think he's a different public official than he was by virtue of us scaring him to death and getting as close as we did. And you know, of course, you know, there's a lot of personal growth through failure. You know, one thing is, you know, when things are going well, you know, you know, everybody is your friend, right? Like everybody is, you know, saying like you're awesome. You're, you know, in the lead up to the election, there's so many people who, you know, said, oh, you got this. Like, I'm so proud to have been part of it. And, you know, everybody's singing your praises, and then you fail. And all these same people are, you know, many of those same people, a lot of people stuck with us and stuff, but many of those people, you know, or, you know, you hear criticizing, well, they should have done this differently, they should have done that, or suddenly aren't calling you nearly as much and things like that. And it's a reminder, like, there are some things, there's some people in your life that will be constant no matter what. There are some things in life that will be constant no matter what. And then there's other things and other people that, you know, that depend on, you know, whether or not you're successful at the time and stuff. And so for me, losing was a very kind of just maturing experience in that, you know, you come to recognize, like, oh yeah, I'm going to focus on the things in life that are constant. In my case, my faith, the fact that I believe that fundamentally the most important thing important reality in my life is that I'm a son of God who will ultimately answer before God for what I do with my life. And then two, of course, a very close second to that is my family, you know, and my duties to my family, the family that that ultimately I've, you know, is will always, you know, be there for me, and that ultimately is the my fundamental obligations in life. So that's a very long kind of summary of everything, but that's one thing I took away from the significant failure of losing that race.
I think one thing that's interesting we haven't had a guest on here with is you were not chasing because that sounds bad, but you had an end goal, right? And the reality that you would probably fail that end goal is statistically high, right?
Yeah.
But I think also what I find more fascinating is you had multiple barriers along the way that you statistically shouldn't win.
Yep.
But what you hit on is when you first won your primary, you talked about there's still a lot of dark valleys in that as you're going there.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm going, how did Jim, in the middle of a dark valley here, that knew this was coming, had to beat that, and then had to do it all over again for round two, how did you get through those valleys? Whoa, how did you stay motivated to keep grinding?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one element was like I had burned my bridges. I'd burned my boats, you know, at the shore, you know, sort of thing. Like it wasn't like I left my job. It wasn't like I could just like go back to the same job, you know, sort of thing. It was like, well, this is what I'm doing now, and if I don't do this, like, I've got to figure out something else. It wasn't like I was going back to my previous job or something. So like I had burned my boats at the shore, you know, sort of thing. And so like that was kind of a motivating thing. Like, you know, it's either this or bust, basically. I mean, going back to the kind of fundamental fact that we felt called to it, I mean, that was just something that just kept me at it. It was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. I have to, you know, I've got to do what it takes to plow through, even in dark valleys. And it is really hard, you know, running for public office. And I think there's a lot of things are like this, running a business or whatever. Like, there's lots of people on any given day when you're running for public office that are, you know, whether it be a donor who you're asking to give money, or an average person who you're asking for their vote, or a, you know, somebody in the media who's doing an interview with you, who say things to you that are just negative and that are just like, you know, stink, you know, and, you know, those negative instances probably are, you know, 5 to 1 more than the positive. So you just have to have a lot of resilience and take it and develop a thick skin and all that. And I would say it got easier as time went on, you know, to go through the valleys, you know, you kind of get tougher, you know, you go through the valleys and it's like, you know, a deeper, you can handle them more as time goes on. But I would say the things that kept me going were, on the one hand, you know, having, you know, this kind of fundamental inner sense where it's like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Two, my family and support from my wife, Molly, who just, you know, was kind of constant rock that I could rely upon. And then three, I had a really good team around me too. Like I was really fortunate and I'm very proud of the fact that we built, a team that was just, you know, I think probably one of the best kind of just like most capable and most dedicated political teams that have been developed in Minnesota in a very long time. And that was really motivating, which are really good people that I trusted and so forth. And just a lot of positive energy there. And like people I could, you know, very candidly lean on when, you know, when I was in a tough spot. And so I would say those are probably the three most significant things, with a huge emphasis just on like believing in what we were doing. Like, and, you know, having that kind of inner sense of like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, helped me kind of fight through the tough spots. And there certainly were tough spots. It's like, you know, you're driving up to to Bemidji, which is a wonderful town and so forth. But the 3.5 hour drive up there is a grind, and you're making phone calls on the way to people to ask, you know, to support you in one way or another. And some of them tell you you stink and whatever. And, you know, and some of, you know, and then you're dealing with the fact that you can't, you know, you're trying to make payroll. You're dealing with the fact that you've got, you know, a media inquiry that you don't want to deal with. It's a really, you know, running a race is a really hard thing. And so, but I would say those were probably the three things that really kind of kept me going through the dark moments. But
yeah, it's interesting. Man, it's almost like running for a political office. I'm going to argue it'd be harder than starting a business, because the minute you hit go, it's like, well, all the ships are burned and your conviction needs to be like full bore. You're not going to make it. Just honestly, yeah. We've all seen it. It's ugly out there. It gets ugly. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But what I'm curious is, before the stage got too big, did you want to quit? You're like, hey, people don't know who Jim is yet. I could probably kind of just like shirk back. No one really know about me and I can move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I mean, there's probably, I announced in December of 21, probably like January of 22, I probably kind of like felt that way, you know, a fair amount, where it was just like, I didn't have any like real positive affirmation yet, like where like it's not like I had landed any big endorsements or I had like tons of like huge support out there. So I was just kind of like building, and I probably could have like, you know, stepped away at that point. And in all candor, in lower moments, I probably did have those thoughts. And I think it was just like, you know, I had the benefit in life of being like I think I've always been in sports. I was a runner, and like I was a distance runner, and so like
gross.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know why, you know, one of these weird people who enjoys running long distances and but I'd run some marathons and stuff, and it's like, it's kind of with those, it's like, you know, there's points where it's just like you feel like you want to stop and all that. And it was kind of similar. It's just like I did learn, you know, that was like people learn ways to build in, you know, perseverance and all that in so many different ways. But for me, like one thing was like athletics and just like plowing through just the toughest parts. And that was probably in some ways that first month where like, you know, those thoughts of, yeah, just like, boy, maybe this was a bad idea, you know. And you're right, like it wouldn't be as embarrassing, you know, wouldn't be as embarrassing as, you know, dropping out if I just peaced out now. But it was just like, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I've got the inner resources. I've got the external support to keep fighting, and I just got to plow through. But I'd be lying to you if I said, you know, there wasn't moments where I just wanted to call it quits.
Yeah. So when you run for office and you don't make it, it is by far probably the one of the most public failure paths you can take. Let's just be honest, right? Like everybody knows, right?
Yeah.
So inside of that, when you didn't make it, especially polls are saying you're leading, it was definitely the race of a lifetime up to this point, right?
Yep.
What does that do to you as a man, emotionally, drive, thought process on life? Like, what do you go through? It can't be just like, all right, on to the next thing. Like, there had to be some real deep conversations with yourself inside of that.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was really, really tough. Just really, really tough. Like because it wasn't like we were kind of hoping for a miracle on election night. It was like, look, we just basically need the polls to be roughly, you know, close to right. And we're good, you know? And I think like the best poll, you know, kind of the most historically most reliable poll going into election night had us up by 6 points, you know, and well outside the margin of error and all that jazz. And then, you know, on election night, as things were coming in, it kind of became clear it was unlikely to happen. There's still kind of some outside chance, but it became clear it was unlikely to happen. And it took a little while to sink in, and it was probably very early the following morning, you know, at 5 a.m. or so, where – you know, became evident. And I think I drafted a concession statement, got that, I think ultimately got it out, you know, later that morning, and put a call into Keith Ellison, the attorney general, and had a fine conversation there, but it took a little while to kind of set in. It wasn't like kind of immediate, but in the probably 2-3 weeks after that, it was really hard. Like, you know, because when you run a race and it's investing in, you know, anything in life really significantly that just, you know, breaks, doesn't happen is you pour your heart into it. You know, like you're working 16 hours a day. You're thinking about it the rest of your time. You're dreaming about it. You know, like, and you're in, like, in my case, like, I wanted to do it because I really wanted to help people, and I thought I could help people. And you feel like you let people down. You feel like, you know, all these people that invested in you, you didn't deliver for. And it was really, really painful. And there's, you know, I had the good fortune of, I think people viewed me as having run a really, really good race. And I got that message from a lot of people. You know, it's got one thing if you run a really terrible race and people are telling you, like, yeah, you kind of messed that one up, you know, sort of thing. But I had the good fortune of a lot of people saying that, you know, the people viewing my race as being run really effectively and all that, and having just kind of conducted myself in a way that was noble and so forth. But you still, you know, you still feel like, you know, you start thinking about things you could have done differently and things along those lines. But to answer your question, you know, it was hard, you know, and it took a while just to, you know, process it and things like that and get back on the horse, you know, and you know, get back to working towards some, you know, goals in life and things like that. But it was really, like, formative for me in my life to go through that. Because, as I said, it was the most significant failure that in my life that I had had to date. And it was really just formative for me to experience that. And to, as I said earlier, to be reminded about what is constant in life, what is most important and things like that. And to remind myself too that this race wasn't something I ran for myself. You know, it wasn't about my ego. It wasn't about just, like, you know, getting those accolades and things like that. It was about, you know, something that I felt called to. And ultimately, if, you know, if the one who I thought was calling me to do this, you know, said, like, no, this isn't what I have in store, this isn't what part of my plan, then I've got to accept that. And come to terms with it, and then get back to those things like raising my family and those things that I do have to focus on. And so it took a while, you know, to answer your question. It took a while to process and stuff, but it was, you know, it was a very, as I said, a very formative experience for me in my life.
What was the hardest lesson to swallow?
Yeah, I mean, like, I never, like, assumed that, you know, we were going to win. Like, we were, you know, in the lead up to it, because of the polling and stuff, a lot of people kind of come up to you saying, like, you know, you're going to win, blah, blah, blah. And I never had let my head, you know, go to that spot. But it's impossible not to, you know, part of your plan, you're telling people, this is what I will do if I'm elected and stuff. And so you get in that headspace, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And so it was really hard just to swallow, like, okay, I'm not going to be able to do all these things that I think could really help people. And that was just really, you know, disappointing, you know, and like I said earlier, you feel like you let people down and you wish you could do those things. And then, you know, it is also just hard to see your opponent who, you know, whatever respect you may have for them, you know, continuing to do those things that you think are wrong, you know, and stuff like that, and are, you know, mistaken and all that stuff. And so that's hard too. But it's just like, you know, the things that you wanted to accomplish, not being able to do.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing your story, because I think one thing I can just tell is, well, let's backtrack quick. You went through, I would say, a significant failure at what I would call a younger age, right? In my opinion, anyone under 45, you're young. Right? Just it's that simple,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, like, you chose at a younger age to take this huge risk.
Mm-hmm.
You had, in my opinion, what I would classify as a huge success in it, right? You did. I mean, ran a great campaign. But the true success I see from it is the maturity you have right now. I don't think you'd be there without running in it, right? The maturity of your faith, understanding your wife, the lessons of, you know, I've experienced on many levels of people who are there and then not there, but not to your level, right? You had people come out of woodwork to support you that I'm sure at some point you're like, oh, we're like linked in arms. And also one day you look around, you're like, oh, my linkage of 100 people is two.
That's right. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's God and my wife. Here we go.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So inside of all of that, though, how does that change Jim's mindset moving forward when it comes to risk? Like, do you think you're like super high tolerant now and you'll just do some crazy things? Or do you think it's all maybe more mellowed you out and you're like, oh, it's really got to be worth it? Otherwise, I'm not going to do it.
I would say the former there. Like I'm much more risk tolerant than I was, like, because this was like such kind of a significant risk, and because I had frankly become more risk averse as I had practiced as an attorney for years, as I was saying earlier. And so, like, I definitely kind of coming out of it, like, I was looking for the kind of the right, you know, the right job where I felt like this was the right, you know, position where I was like, okay, well, this is, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Whereas maybe in previous day of my life, it was like, well, this is a, you know, good paycheck, provide some good professional opportunities and so forth. But I kind of took my time and wanted to wait for the right thing. And broadly, like, I'm just much more risk tolerant by virtue of having taken this one big risk. And even though it didn't come out the way I had hoped, you know, there was, you know, really, I didn't do it for me personally, but there was positive things that came about from it for me personally. And so it was like, even though there was ultimate failure, there was, you know, positive things other than my personal growth or otherwise that came out of it. But, so I would say, yeah, I'm definitely more just risk tolerant than I was previously, willing to just kind of step out and do big things and things like that. Because not only because it's like, well, you know, I took a big risk and it turned out fine, even if I didn't win, but it's just like, oh, you know, look at the impact I can have. And I did have an impact, even though I lost, you know, by taking a big risk and everything. And so, yeah, I would say definitely more willing to step out there and so forth. But
yeah, it's interesting where you talk about how, like, the fruits that still came from it afterwards. I was talking to my brother-in-law a few weeks ago. We rented an Airbnb with the whole family, and him and I were talking about, it's like, it is impossible to progress in anything significantly without loss. Yeah. Like, you just can't. I'm not, you know, let's keep and raise, right? I'm not saying, like, you know, you should lose your whole family and everything to go chase something, but if you're not willing to lose things, whether it's lose a race or lose some money or lose some friends that don't belong in your circle or, you know, have negative impact in your life occur to you, you're never going to get these huge gains in growth and experiences. And that's exactly what you're experiencing, right? Like, if I didn't take this leap, sure, I slid back, but I also ended up in a spot where I can still drive forward what my vision was because I'm humble enough. It didn't have to be with this title.
Yeah.
I just needed a platform to be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like, and, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it sounds cliche and stuff like that. And, you know, in sports, it's no pain, no gain, you know, but it's really true. Like, and there's a, there really is, like, just something, you know, stuff so much in life, you know, in a, you know, extraordinarily wealthy country that we are in, a, you know, in a world where, like, you can very easily live that bubble wrapped life. Like, it's very easy to get drawn into that. And that's, like, I mean, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with it. I don't think, but it's like, you know, I don't think, you know, that's the path in life that requires that it has the most meaning or things like that. And that doesn't mean, like, oh, you have to go start a business or you have to run a political race or anything. But I do think it does mean, like, you know, you should think hard about getting married, you know, young, having kids, you know, doing these things that I think provide the most meaning in life. And because anything that is worthwhile doing has pain associated with it. You know, C.S. Lewis has a line, and I'll butcher this, but it's like, you know, love anything in your life and your heart will certainly be broken, you know? And that is emphatically true, right? You know, and, but, you know, that's what we're made for, is to love and to, you know, to love others and so forth. But your heart will be broken through that, you know, and stuff. And so 100%, I totally agree with what you're saying there.
Wouldn't you say, I'm going to push back a little bit. So I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with living a comfortable life. Mm-hmm. And I would argue there is, both from my own biblical standpoint, as well as, even if you're not biblical, a lot of people like to say they're here to serve others, right?
Yeah.
And so I would argue from that standpoint is intrinsically wrong. I'm curious on your feedback on that.
I would say, like, you're probably right on the you know, living a comfortable life, just broadly. Like, you can't, you know, like, we are made for sacrifice. We are human beings made, you know, that, you know, I believe, you know, we are, you know, created in God's image, and, you know, God, you know, expressed, you know, the fullness of love by virtue of dying on a cross for us, and, you know, we're called to imitate that love, and so I do think, like, that's what we're all fundamentally called to. Now I think what that looks like is different. You know, people can live a very, you know, very quiet, humble life of, you know, doing very, you know, not starting a business, not running a not running for public office, you know, and so forth. Just living a quiet life, raising their family raising their family, focusing on just the fundamental things of being human without kind of doing like those massive risk taking things, other than, you know, getting married and having a family that are risk taking things and are in some ways the most risky things out there, but without doing kind of the other things that we've been talking about. And I think that's a very noble in some way, you know, that's the way most people will live their life. And I think as long as they're thinking about, you know, their life and in terms of sacrifice and in terms of serving others and so forth, I think that's noble. And I think we're probably in agreement on that. But you're right. Like, I do think there is something wrong of just like fundamentally seeking a life of comfort, you know, like, you know, working a few hours a day and then hanging out on the beach. Like, I do think that is not a life conducive to happiness or to meaning or to what we're fundamentally called to. But
so 100% would agree. And that's kind of what I'm poking at, is I think there's a, I don't know if it, I'm not even going to tag a generation to it, but I think there is a belief around, hey, let's serve myself first and everyone else is second. And that could still be, I'm going to serve myself first and start a business, but that's still my opinion. You're doing what's comfortable because you're taking care of you first versus going, no, I should take care of those around me.
Yep.
Obviously, again, put context around the audience.
Yep.
But yeah, it's about, and that's how I look at that whole comfort thing. It's easier to take care of just me. Like, yeah, it's
totally,
easy.
Totally.
But to go, hey, I'm not going to do A through Z because of my wife, and then not going to get this done tonight because my buddy really needs me because he's going through stuff. Like, that's the heart I think we should 100%. Lead with.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. Totally agree.
But with society today, that, you know, that I think that's a great example of a fallacy. A lot of people say we should, you know, put self first, right? Mm-hmm. So any specific fallacy you're really seeing that's popping up a lot now or in the last, just say, handful of years that you just don't agree with?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, my view is that this thing where people wait forever to, or not forever, but wait a long time to get married and have kids, I think is a mistake. And people can have different views and things like that. And there are individual circumstances, you know, that can make sense. But like, I think a lot of people, they think like, okay, I've got to have everything buttoned up fully in my life. I've got to be fully done with all school. I've got to be well established in a business, well established in my profession, whatever, before I get married. And then from there, some period of time before I have kids. And, you know, my view is like, you know, if you're, you know, basically able to pay the bills, plus you're mentally, emotionally mature enough, you know, to get married and have kids, like, go for it. You know, like, my wife and I knew about a month, you know, dating her, I wanted to marry her. We got engaged, ultimately 9 months after we got married. After we met. And then after that, I was like, well, I know I'm engaged. I want to marry her. I remember talking to my wife, like, let's just get married over spring break. It was like a month away. we'll get the families there, you know, and everything. And she's like, we'll give it a couple more months. But it was 5 months later after we got engaged. So, like, you know, basically 14 months from meeting to getting married. And by today's standards, that's super quick. But maybe by historical standards, not so quick. But I was like, you know, at that point, like, we were, you know, I think my wife Molly at the time was, when we got married, 24. I was 25. Young by today's standards. But it was like, we both knew we wanted to get married. We were, you know, mature enough to do so. I was like, of course, you know, well, let's go for it. And I, you know, I've done a lot of things, you know, wrong in life. I, you know, probably think about a number of things wrong, but I think we got that kind of right. You know, like, we were ready in life. We knew we loved each other. We knew we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. Like, let's go for it. And then, you know, we wanted to have kids, you know, as quickly as we could. And it ended up taking us a while and stuff. But like, I just think it's a mistake when people think about family life where it's like, oh, I've got to have everything buttoned up fully until I get going on that. And my view is like, you're never going to have everything buttoned up fully. And even if you don't have everything buttoned up fully, like, things work out, you know, like, you, as long as you work at it, as long as you're selfless, as long as you, you know, do what it, you know, the kind of fundamental things to be successful, like, it'll be fine, you know, and it won't be, you know, and having things kind of fully in line, you know, won't necessarily result in, you know, in the best thing too. So anyway, my view is just like if I could give advice to young people or just to people generally, it's just like, you know, take some risk and go for, you know, go for raising kids, you know, getting married, having kids early.
I think. Why do you think the mind shift has occurred?
I mean, that's a good question. I think part of it is just like societal shifts where people can like live together now without getting married, you know, like there's just like people, that's like a fine thing to do. And in the past, like people had to, you know, had to get married in order to live together, at least in, you know, in terms of like societal expectations and so forth. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's just like looking out, like, and seeing that there's a lot of failure of marriages in our country, and people being more cautious as a result, you know, either coming from broken marriages, from parents of broken marriages, or just seeing that with friends or otherwise. Maybe there's just probably more caution, and I certainly understand that. I think, you know, there's a lot of focus on wealth and so forth, and some people just, you know, it's having kids a little bit later does, you know, allow you to accumulate more wealth ultimately and stuff. And so I don't know, I'm kind of just spitballing there, but those would be a few things that come to mind. Maybe with the emphasis just on the fact that, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of broken families up there, and people don't want that, and it's a risky thing to get married and have kids and stuff. And so I understand that, you know, that mentality and stuff. And you know, my counter would be like, you know, I don't think it happened because people got married young. I think, a lot of other factors, a lot of societal factors, a lot of other, you know, stuff. And again, it's like ultimately all of this is qualified by, you know, people got to be in the right headspace. They got to be mature enough all that. But, you know, I just think just the mentality of getting married late is delaying. I think my encouragement to people would just be like, go for it. Yeah. Sort of thing. But
it's interesting. What is it? One of Jordan Peterson's famous quotes is one of the best things a man can do to simplify his life.
Yeah.
Is to find a woman when he's young and marry her.
Yeah. Right? Is that right? Yeah.
Which I would agree with, man. I watch all my buddies right now run around on the social apps, but, it's interesting though. I would say, so for me, I got married at 22. So,
yeah,
right, like awesome. The whole world burned down and everyone was panicking. And, you know, that was the dumbest thing I could have ever done. Which, when you look at it from a research perspective, what they found out is by getting married young, we actually have a higher odds of not getting divorced because we haven't formed habits yet fully. So versus when you're in your 30s, well, I mean, think about it. I mean, if you've been alone or dating, but, you know, your own person for till you're 35, and I've talked to people faith-wise, it's just easier to have this conversation, that are that old, they're like, it is brutal. Like, when you get married at that age, just like, you know, battle the titans trying to change the mindset.
I get that, yeah.
And I equate kind of everything you're talking about. It's whatever is culturally popular is what's easy, and so that's the path people choose. It's kind of like one of our first episodes where I said, I can show up with a salad 10 days in a row, and it's the weirdest thing ever. Mm-hmm. If I show up at McDonald's 10 days in a row, nobody cares.
Right?
It's societal norms.
Yep.
But it's funny because I'm on the flip side on the kid perspective. So my wife and I don't want kids. And some people poked me. It's definitely part of it. If you look at my childhood results and like, hey, I don't want kids, the way I was, you know, brought up, and same partially with her. And but the interesting part, it took us forever to decide that, because our thing was still, well, we don't want it to be a selfish reason. So what's the real reason? And then what are we going to do with that time instead, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because in our opinion, it was like, hey, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to clearly be in a spot that a lot of people wouldn't be. Yep. So then how do we take care of our nieces and nephews? And how do we take care of other people's kids around us, right? But I agree. You don't wait on kids to be ready, because like you said, it's never going to happen. Kind of like, hey, I'm going to wait to quit the job for the, or I'm going to wait to move for the, and it's like, we all know this intrinsically. Like it is not ever a cohesive time. We're selling our house and everyone's like, you're insane. And I'm like, this isn't a good time. I'm like, hey, when is? My calendar. Let me pick a date.
Totally. Yeah.
But I love what I would say from the big picture standpoint, everyone really needs to look at the choice they're making. Is it for self, or is it a selfless decision? And then is it because it's a societal norm? It's because it's what they want. Like for us, it's interesting being Christians, we get a lot of flack. Like we get a lot of people who are like, hey, you're horrible, like you're going to hell, like God hates you. Like, hey, cool, have fun with that. Like you and your one Bible verse, you know, you go enjoy But I think even from your holistic standpoint, I'm super on board if it's like, hey, commitment, right? Like, just be okay with it. It's not at the end of the world, and be okay with giving up yourself to others. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it hurts a little bit, but it's really joyful in the end. But,
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, and ultimately, like, you've got to acknowledge, like, in evaluating things, like, these are, like, you know, you're speaking, you know, I was speaking in broad strokes earlier and stuff, and people have to, like, think about, you know, their own situation
and everything.
And so, like, but yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, broadly, it's like, yeah, I mean, just like, you know, what the most important things in life rarely, you know, come where and everything is, you know, perfectly, yep. you know, perfect and perfectly set up for it. And so you just got to, you know, go for it and so forth. And so, yeah, sounds like we're in agreement there, but yeah, it's just, broadly, we started the conversation with this, like, being willing to, you know, put yourself out there and take some chances in life. But
oh, I like it. I get tired of the phrase that people tell kids today. They're like, "Don't you want to try on the pair of shoes before you buy them?" I'm like, "Come on, really? Yeah. Do we just compare marriage to that?"
I know,
like,
that's true.
Holy
yeah.
cow! You're like, yeah. Whoa.
I mean, that's a fundamental point, right? I mean, yeah, treating marriage like it is a pair of shoes, yeah, right? Like, treating the other person as though they're a commodity, treating you know, like, and I just think that's a. Yeah, I mean, my view is that's the way to, you know, the wrong way to think about it. It's just, you know, because, you know, like, you know, these, yeah, marriage isn't that, no. you know, it's not, and it's not, you know, it's not just some, you know, little contract to enter into. It's a, you know, covenant. It's, you know, and it's all this stuff. And so, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I always tell guys, because I first went, obviously, my friend circle ever to get married.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of them will come up to me and they're like, "Hey, dude, like, it's always, I would say, 4 to 12 weeks before the wedding date, actually, or 4 to 8. And they're like, "Hey, dude, like, this is kind of freaking me out a little bit." I'm like, "Okay." And like, "What do you mean? They're like, it's a lot to take in. This is forever." Like, I'm just kind of like questioning, not that they want to leave, but like the whole concept. I'm like, "Oh, good." And they're like, "What do you mean good?" I was like, "Well, you're actually like taking and considering the weight of what you're deciding." I said, and it's crazy. The ones who haven't said that to me, not to throw shade, but it's like they were divorced under 3 years. Like, I've known them. It's because they were like, "Well, it's I can do this and we're married, and I can do this and we're divorced." Right.
And
then there's other people who took on that weight. And I've seen ones that's really been sad who took on the weight, but their partner didn't. And then they fought trying to save it. And that's just super hard to watch. You're like, absolutely. You truly like this was forever. And yeah, I just think people need to, in all aspects of life, like, take on that weight, decide, is it really worth where you want to go? Like, when you were going into the race, you were considering, "Hey, this is, this is going to be a bloody battle, but I know I'm called to do this. I'm willing to take on this weight and I am going to sign, burn the boats and move on." Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, it's a good call. Like, the, I mean, like, you don't want to take on grave obligations lightly, you know, and that's, you know, true in a lot of different areas of life. And sometimes it's an easy decision because it is just like, you know, it's like, you know, it's a, you know, it's, you know, like, if you see somebody on the side of the road, you know, and, you know, who needs help and you're risking your life to do it, like, you just kind of automatically do it. You know, it's like a quick, easy decision. But sometimes, it's harder to make the right decision. It takes time to reflect upon it and all that. And for most big decisions, that's what it takes, is a lot of serious thoughts, and you got to feel the weight and stuff. And, you know, I tend to be a, you know, kind of pretty, you know, I'm a lawyer, a pretty thorough thinker, and I tend to think through stuff very carefully. Some people, you know, don't need to do that to make the right decision. But you definitely, you know, I do think, yeah, most big decisions require some time to reflect upon and so forth. And you got to make sure you want to appreciate, like, oh, yeah, you know, marriage is something that's, you know, that is incredibly important for kids, for people broadly and everything. And so, you do worry a little bit when people are taking it lightly,
right?
Or seemingly taking it lightly. So,
yeah, I think what's interesting throughout the conversation, right? It's been, even with what the fallacy you called out, it's been around conviction, it's been around commitment, just burning the ships and going all in. It's been around, hey, even though I'm experiencing failures and struggles and something, it doesn't mean I give up on it, right?
Yeah.
So with the kind of that synopsis, as well as your overall thoughts, what challenge would you leave with people tonight? Like, hey, y'all out there sitting at home or riding in your car.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, you know, there's the, you know, in the Bible, there's a talk where Jesus, you know, says to his disciples, you know, put out into the deep, you know, to, you know, catch a fish, you know, to go catch, you know, the fish. And they, of course, ultimately do that and catch their nets are overflowing and so forth. And, like, I try to think about my life, like, am I, am I putting, you know, at any given moment, like, am I putting out into the deep? And that doesn't always mean, like, I'm out there doing something big or things like that. Like, am I investing enough in my daughters? Am I investing enough in my wife, Molly? Am I doing my fundamental obligations, you know, that are sometimes uncomfortable and, you know, challenging and things like that, or I'd rather be doing other stuff or whatever, but, like, am I, you know, doing it? So it's not necessarily, you know, it's always some big thing, but, like, I think what I would encourage people to do is just to think about, like, am I putting out into the deep in my life, and taking, doing the things that I'm, you know, called to do at this moment, and am I taking the risks that I'm being called to do?
I like it. Yeah, to have a, spend the time weekly going, hey, am I being fully committed where I need to be? Mm-hmm. And if I'm not, where is that?
Yeah, yeah. I think that well said. Well said. Like that. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I appreciate you coming and being open about what you would call your biggest, you know, failure in your life. And
well, appreciate the opportunity. It's good to, you know, you kind of by talking through it, you reflect upon it a little bit too. And yes, you know, good question. So appreciate you having me on, Devin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Took quite a fall, didn't we, Master Bruce?
And why did we fall, Bruce? So we can learn to pick ourselves up.